Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. How are you today? Yes, it's a good day. It's a good day because after doing this program for almost 10 years, yes, I will be celebrating 10 years the end of March 2019. Unbelievable. I've been trying to get this person on my program for about that long. And here we are. I finally am going to bring on Janet Kalish. Janet is an animal lover, retired Spanish high school teacher, vegan and freegan. She is an active member of the NYC freegan.info group, in which she gives trash tours, helps organize film nights and discussions, really, really free markets and do-it-yourself events, all with the purpose of educating and encouraging people to be less wasteful and to realize how our current system is abusing our planet and its inhabitants by sharing, repurposing, salvaging, and reusing, by living with a heightened sensitivity to the barrage of advertising and a will to resist it. We may stave off the horrifying trends that are dramatically altering our world. Another reason why I wanted to bring Janet on this program is because she's my friend.
Thank you, Karen. That was a nice introduction.
Yes, thank you, finally, for joining me. I know you have such a busy lifestyle that we finally managed to get you in here today. Okay, we're going to talk about your beginning on this freegan vegan journey, okay? Where would you like to start? How did you become a vegan and how did you become a freegan? And tell us what that means.
Well, I was a vegetarian before I was a vegan, and I became a freegan much later. So I'll start with the story of how I became a vegetarian. I have always been a really strong animal lover, always felt conscious growing up as an omnivore, and my family had every kind of meat. And I always was conscious that if we're eating bacon, we're eating a pig. If we're eating a hamburger, we're eating a cow. And the obvious chicken. Mm-hmm. So it always hurt me and didn't seem right and didn't make sense. And I grew up with pets, and I really connected that if I have a dog, he feels, I wouldn't want to eat him. Why would I want to eat a cow?
You're one of the few people that connects those dots.
I don't know why, but yeah. Yes, I feel very conscious of that and continue to. So as a teenager and younger, I wanted to become a vegetarian. I didn't know the word vegan at that time. Mm-hmm. And I was born in 1962. And as a teenager, I did, as I think I was 13 years old, I attempted to become vegetarian. And my family was having its usual meals. My parents and two brothers would have the chicken or the steak or the fish every single night. There'd be some kind of meat on the table. And mm-hmm. my attempt at vegetarianism was uneducated. And I had peanut butter and something every night. So it would be a sandwich with peanut butter and jelly. And then to be creative, I'd try peanut butter and banana, and then another night it would be
peanut butter and celery. Did you ever do that?
not then, but right. Since I had peanut butter and sunflower seeds, which I thought Ooh. Was brilliant, and I gave it a name, combining my first and last name, and called that the Jalish.
Okay, Janet Kalish eats the Jalish.
Yeah. And it lasted a week, my vegetarian efforts.
It's hard when we're young and we're not skilled and we don't have control of the shopping or the meal making. We don't know what it is we want to eat. We just know what we don't want to eat or who we don't want to eat.
Sure. And knowing now many teenagers who have the same dilemma, I understand it's a huge problem growing up in a family where they don't recognize that it's healthy. Mm-hmm. They think of it as, especially back then when we were young, that there wasn't enough understanding that vegetarianism is in fact healthier and not going to damage me in any way. So
we have to qualify here because a Coca-Cola and French fry diet can be vegan but not healthy.
True. And I probably wouldn't have had a very well-rounded diet if I had continued with peanut butter on a daily basis. Yeah. So, yes, of
Although
course.
Although peanut butter can be a very nutritious food and part of any healthy diet.
So I quit and put it on the back burner. And I did tend to like my eggplant and like my spinach. And there were things that I liked that were vegetarian, but I was not a vegetarian. And when I got to college, I did meet vegetarian. And also in summers, I had a camp counselor who was a vegetarian.
Wow.
And that was very inspiring to me. And I had even looked at the book that she had on her bed, and it was a book about vegetarianism. Oh. And I think it was John Robbins's book.
Oh, that was 1987 that came out. Could it have been then?
No.
Maybe Diet for a Small Planet, Francis L'Amour LePage.
That's probably
what
it was.
Came out in the 70s.
Yeah, that's probably what it was then. Yes, and it explained about the way our teeth work, and our teeth resemble horses' teeth more than cats' teeth, and our intestines work more like an herbivore rather than like a cat's stomach. And so I started to learn that actually biologically we'll be fine eating vegetarian diet. And I hadn't really considered all of that until that summer when I was in sleepaway camp. And that gave me a little more food for thought that I put on the back burner. And then once I got to college and I saw that people my own age were able to live as vegetarians, and I even met a vegan there.
Wow.
I was really impressed. And finally, in my final year of college, my fourth year of college, I became a vegetarian. And that was in 1984.
Mm-hmm. 1984. That was about when I became, well, I started when I was 15 not eating meat, but I was still eating fish occasionally. And I think it was 1984 when I stopped eating fish. And I wasn't even eating a lot of fish. It was just occasional. But I was at Epcot Center in Disney the World. It was brand new. And they had this Food for the Future exhibit. And there were these white tanks where they were growing one kind of fish. And I just found it horrifying. And I thought, if this is how fish have to be grown for me to eat them, I'm not eating them anymore. And I was done with fish. But then 4 years later is when I went vegan. How about you?
It took me a long time to go vegan after being vegetarian. And in fact, my first year as a vegetarian, I was still eating fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went off the fish.
Well, there are cultures that call vegetarians people who eat fish. So it's confusing, especially when you don't realize that fish have feelings. And like Nemo said, fish are your friends, not food.
Right. And I had a cousin who always, from a very young age, refused to eat fish because she always felt the compassion for fish, and especially seeing what happens to a lobster in order to make a lobster food.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was always conscious of that my younger cousin was not eating fish and why. And so that also became something that I chose to do to get rid of eating fish as well. And even your expression that they were growing fish, growing as if it's a cultivating crop.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, okay. What about the freegan scene? That's
So years later I became that was 84 that I became vegetarian, and then in 96 I became vegan. And by then it was much easier than in 84. There were alternatives to cheese. There were alternatives to milk. They were plentiful. It was easy to become a vegan. And by then I'd read plenty and understood and been to, I believe, by then I was already at Earth Save events. Is that possible?
I think 96? I started my monthly dinner lectures here in New York City around maybe 1998.
Okay. So I was already a vegan.
You were already there, yeah.
But
that's how we met.
Yes. And it was absolutely clear to me, as I don't really have to go elaborate on this show, I don't think.
No.
But it was absolutely clear that if I'm a vegetarian for reasons of compassion and for reasons of helping our planet, then there's absolutely no difference in the cruelty that's involved in getting milk and getting eggs than there, as there is in – there's no more cruelty than there is yes. in raising the chicken itself and the beef and the pig and
yeah. Unfortunately, that information wasn't as clear as it is today. It's super clear that chickens and dairy cows probably have it the worst because not only does a dairy cow become a hamburger ultimately, she has to be tortured and raped and bear children that are ripped away from her and all of that.
It's heartbreaking.
Yes.
And I think my freeganism comes from a similar place of a sense of horror at what's happening in our world and a sense that I need to do something in my own personal behavior to respond to it. And
so what's a freegan?
Freeganism.
What's a freegan freegan?
Freeganism is a movement that opposes our very wasteful current system of economy, which encourages people to buy at a rate that they can't afford and at a rate that the planet can't sustain, and in so doing, discard at a frenetic rate that the landfills can't support and that we already know our oceans can't support, and that leads to sending toxins into our earth to poison all of us. Us people, us animals, and us plants, all of it, all of our inhabitants are being destroyed by this frenetic economy. And when you hear economic reports in the news about growth, and that's supposed to be a good thing, it's in fact a very negative thing that's damaging our world. And so the very crux of what our economy is built on is planetary destruction. And so freeganism is looking for a way to respond to that instead of just saying, well, we got to stop buying, which is what we say. We also say, let's find alternatives to buying. We have to survive. We have to eat. We consume. We consume other things besides food. We live. We have furniture. We have books. We have entertainment. We have clothing. We have means of transportation. How do we get around? How do we wear? How do we sit down and live and read? And how do we do this in a way that feels in alignment with our beliefs? And so we're encouraging alternatives to this system, basically through cooperation, through sharing, through repurposing, through the creative use of our resources that are already here rather than mining continually more resources.
So the sensational part of freeganism, the one that maybe some media programs like to focus on, we can get into that later because we did a few together a few decades ago, is what's called dumpster diving. And it has an ick factor to it when people don't understand what it is. So can you talk about that?
Yes, it's definitely something that people respond with revulsion or at least at arm's distance, trying to understand why someone like me who doesn't have a financial need to support myself through reaching into the trash for what I'm going to eat, why I would do that. And we do lead these trash tours. In New York City, we don't tend to literally dumpster dive, but we use the term dumpster diving. Sometimes we'll call it urban foraging or scavenging. I like to use the word rescuing food. And that's how I see it really, is that it's a rescue mission.
So if you've ever been on the streets of New York City after 10 p.m., you'll see – you don't see dumpsters, but you see lots of plastic garbage bags in front of many, many businesses, especially the food businesses, grocery stores, bakeries, restaurants, and that's your gold mine.
Yes. New York City is unique in this country in that – and I guess basically in the world in that most – because of the dense – nature of our city, the way that our trash gets put out is right there on the curb, and our trash, meaning also the business's trash, gets put out right on the curb, whereas in most of our country, the businesses have their own parking lot and their own dumpsters, and they could be fenced off. They could be in a private area that would mean that you'd have to trespass in order to get in.
Mm-hmm.
But the dumpsters in New York City and the trash in New York City is right there on the street. So we don't have to worry when we lead a trash tour that we're going to be in trouble with the law. It's legal. The garbage is on the curb, and the curb stuff
is public.
Most people don't choose to bend down and say, what's this in this bag that's been thrown out? Most people assume that if something's been thrown out, it was for a good reason. And people trust that people are doing the right thing. And they're assuming that if there's good food, it's getting sent somewhere where it can be used. And if there's food in the trash, it must be bad. But people are wrong. There's a lot of good food that's been being put in the trash, and there's nothing wrong with it.
So when I first learned about this, this was around 2005 or so, and from you, and I decided to go on a few dumpster dives, and I was amazed, horrified, surprised that all of the food, one of the ones that still stands out in my mind are the big plastic garbage bags filled with perfectly good bagels that bagel bakeries just get rid of because they can't sell day-old bagels. These are big garbage bags with just bagels. Now, it was a challenge for me because I really wasn't into eating white flour foods, but I hated to see all of that go to waste. I would take like a bag and throw them in my freezer, you know, for whoever wanted them. But that happens every night. And then there was another place, Lifetime, I think it was. They have one of these, they serve prepared food.
And yeah, they have a hot bar.
They have a hot bar. And they had soup. They would just throw out a big bag of soup.
Yes.
It was just crazy, the food that would go. Now, we do have City Harvest. We have groups in New York City that do rescue some food, but it's the tip of the iceberg, right?
Absolutely, yes. They're doing a good service. And yes, I think at this point they have 22 trucks in their fleet, and they're working hard to pick up good food and to bring it to food pantries and food banks and to soup kitchens and to, shelters. And I don't know who else receives this food, but I know that it's a very good service that's providing good food to people. And it's absolutely, as you say, the tip of the iceberg. It's the 22, it sounds like a lot, I guess, if you don't see what we're finding, but 22 trucks isn't enough. It's not even nearly enough.
No.
And I think a lot of stores have, they put in a clear plastic bag that says on it City Harvest, and they put out special for City Harvest, or City Harvest comes and collects it. But there's still tremendous quantity that these stores don't donate to City Harvest because of issues with...
There are hygiene rules.
Mm-hmm. There's the temperature of the food has to be kept at a certain amount, so they might not give any of their yogurts to City Harvest because it's hard to preserve them. And so there might be thousands of yogurts that just get thrown in the
trash. And if a yogurt gets thrown in the trash in the evening and put out on the street and you pick it up, it hasn't been out long enough to go bad.
No, exactly.
But then there's plenty of food that doesn't even require refrigeration. Of course, there's going to be food that isn't good and is icky or slimy or whatever. But then you also have perfectly fine packaged goods, and some of them aren't even past the expiration date. But somehow they manage to make their way out into the garbage. Like holidays. If holiday foods, holiday chocolates or something, if it's after the holiday, sure, they might go on sale in some stores, but some stores just move them out.
Right.
It's just chocolate.
Right. Right. And if it's if it's Halloween chocolate that's shaped like skeletons and skulls and it has the theme of the black and the orange designs on it, that box will say, if Halloween of 2018, the box will say that this doesn't expire until July of 2019 or even later. So we can see that the packaging even tells you that this food is not close to expiration, and yet it's passé because of our style, because now it's a new style. Now it's after Halloween, you got to get ready for the Thanksgiving candies, and then after that, the Christmas candies, and then after that, the Valentine's candies, and on and on and on. And each season has such waste built into it. And as you say, yes, there are some stores that will discount, but tremendous quantities of chocolates and candies mm-hmm. go to waste. And not just junk food, but yogurts, for example, or cereal, or salsa, or any kind of packaged food that does have a date can be thrown out, not because it's expired, but because we have a system that's so big that they're shipping in quantities. So the truck just came to the A&P. Is there still A&P?
Yeah,
the Walbaums,
whatever. Some big supermarket. Christie's,
the D'Agostino's. Mm-hmm. Then the truck just came to bring in a new shipment of salsas. And these new salsas are dated 2020. So that means when you put the new salsas dated 2020 on the shelf, you'll take away whatever salsas are on the shelf because you can't fit everything.
And they just get thrown away.
And they just get tossed to the curb.
Perfectly good jars of things that are vacuum sealed, never opened, and fine.
Right.
Get in the garbage. This is our culture today. And you've picked up vegetables, packaged vegetables, bags of greens, and all kinds of things. So back then when I did my virgin dumpster dive, the media was paying attention back then. I don't know if they're paying much attention anymore. I just remember there was a rash of it then. And we picked up a lot of food and we ended up being filmed by 2020. And they came to the dumpster dive and then they came to my apartment a few days later and we all made a big meal. And it was quite lovely, I thought. Excellent food. But what you'll remember this, what was frustrating about the program that finally aired a few weeks later was they weren't honest in their representation. And they cut in a film of a little dog peeing on garbage. Do you remember mm-hmm. that?
Yes,
now, I
remember
that. Little
that.
Dog was no – I don't know where that dog came from. It was just extra footage. That
yes.
wasn't part of the dive. There aren't dogs peeing on the garbage like this. But, you know, they wanted to give you an impression. That wasn't really fair.
It's true. People, as you say earlier, that we're sensationalist and what's catching the attention of the media is that we're doing something taboo. We're going into the garbage. And if they want to make that look interesting – they're going to take the most negative connotations of what is garbage and connect that with freegans. And so freegans are promoted this way or they're shown this way. We've had a lot of media attention, and often the teaser before the news piece comes on is, coming up next, we're going to talk to somebody who chooses to eat from the trash. And they say it with an expression and a tone that shows their disdain and their disgust for what it is that we're doing.
Now, ultimately, in a perfect world, you wouldn't need to dumpster dive.
That's exactly right. The freegans are different than just someone who's dumpster diving purely for survival, in that we're hoping to put ourselves out of business, so to speak. We don't want to have a system that's this wasteful. We don't want to see that all of these thousands and thousands and thousands of tons of food are being thrown out constantly, daily, and looking all around us, knowing that there are people who are hungry, who are malnourished, mm-hmm. who are starving.
Yeah, there's over a billion people starving around the world, and we just lose so much food. Food waste is a giant problem. And the problem of food waste, we're focusing on one little itty-bitty part of food waste. There's food waste on the farm, when the farmer grows food, there's food waste in every step of the way of getting food to the store and then to your kitchen. I mean, how many of you out there throw out food? And don't shake your head. I mean, I know that most people do.
I just saw 500 hands go up.
Oh, yeah.
I saw you.
I have to say that I don't throw away food, okay? I take pride. I hear, to start with, maybe you heard this once or a few times, Janet, but when I was growing up, you know, we would hear, people are starving in Europe, you know, eat what's on your plate. People are starving in Europe. So this was, and it's funny because...
They didn't say Ethiopia?
No, they said Europe.
Uh-huh.
So this was, I guess, I would say around 1968. I was 10. I was born in 1958. And in hindsight, I realize I was born not that long after World War II. Mm-hmm. And yet it seemed like, you know, some ancient thing, World War II. But it was in the memory of my parents and all the people around them.
Right.
And the message of people are starving in Europe obviously came from wartime. And so we had to eat everything on our plates.
And I had a similar experience where my dad had an expression that still resonates with me that was, don't take more than you're going to eat, which I liked because it didn't require us to overeat. It was giving us a sense of responsibility of what we're putting on our plate. And I grew up with that sense. And I don't recall wasting much either growing up. And I think that little saying carries today. And I recommend it to everyone that I see people who fill their plate. I'm involved with these freegan feasts once a month. And I do see some people who have a habit of just taking more than they're going to eat. And not just there, but in general, when people go to a buffet or they just, before even sampling the food, they might take way more than they're going to eat. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, once it's been on your plate and your fork has gone into that food, it's not as likely to be shared. It's more likely to just be turned into garbage.
I know my parents' generation, and even I as a teen and young adult, used to get really excited at those all-you-can-eat buffets and salad bars. It was just heavenly. And now, okay, I'll admit I'm a food snob. I'm not interested in that. I don't want to eat huge quantities of all kinds of food just because it's there.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's understandably tempting because people love free stuff, and it's sort of like being free to have all you can eat. So there's a temptation with that. But it reminds me of that disgusting American custom of having...
We're not being judgmental now, are we?
I can't help you with that. I'm going to say it again. The disgusting American culture of food contests, food eating contests, like on the 4th of July. Or I've seen in Texas, there's some restaurant that encourages you to eat the 72 ounces, or I don't remember if that's the right number, but you get it free if you can eat it all within
thing.
An hour. And you can, and then people are downing all of these hot dogs, and it's really, truly sickening. And yet they put it on a sports channel as if it's a sport. And there's nothing funny about stuffing your face with the carcasses of dead animals as a game, as a contest, and then to have a monetary reward for that. We should be giving monetary rewards for people doing creative things to save the animals and to save the planet. And instead, we make a mockery of the torture that an animal had to endure.
Yeah, we are one interesting species. There's a connection between veganism and freeganism. Now, I remember... I thought freegans were vegans, but I don't think all freegans are vegans.
That's true.
Anymore.
I don't think that freegans were vegans ever as a definitive statement. I think the way the word came about was that there were a couple of people who were salvaging food because they didn't like it going to waste, and they were vegans. And then they opened a bag and they looked in, and one of them found, now if the story's correct, as I remember it, hearing it, one of them said, hey, a cheesecake. And the other one said, hey, dude, that's not vegan. And the first responded, well, it's freegan. And they coined the phrase this way. This is the legend, or
as I understand it.
Right. I might have it a little off, but something to that effect.
Okay.
And so it was to define a diet that is free, and therefore, because you're salvaging it, you're not contributing to the monetarily, you're not paying, you're not supporting a system that is violent and cruel and destructive to our planet. And in fact, by pulling something out of the trash, you're taking it out of the landfill, and you're actually relieving something of the damage that would have been done if it were just to be sent on a truck to travel hundreds of miles, possibly thousands of miles, to be wasted. And so that was the idea behind the word freegan initially. Now, yes, there are plenty of freegans who are vegan, and there are plenty of freegans who are just vegetarian. I shouldn't say just.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some freegans who are also meat eaters. There are plenty also of freegans who have a vegan sensibility and absolutely hate the cruelty involved in the production of meat and dairy and eggs, but will make some exceptions because they found this muffin in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for a bit, even though I had been a strict vegan. After I became freegan, at some point, I weakened, and there was a carrot muffin that I wanted and tasted, and I didn't feel so guilty because it was something that I salvaged mm-hmm. and rescued. But I don't feel as good for my own personal health in doing that, and so I made more of an effort to try to avoid doing that. And in fact, my New Year's resolution for 2019 is to be back to a real vegan. So now I'm really vegan again.
Yay! Thank you, Janet. Yeah, well, we can do a lot of different things to make this world a better place. Now, what was the most amazing thing, food item, that you ever salvaged from a trash tour or a dive? Can you think of?
Well, I really like grapefruit, and I have a little superstition about grapefruit because I know they're high in vitamin C, and I feel like if I've eaten a grapefruit, I have a sort of superpower shield around me that's going to prevent me from getting sick that day. And it's almost really like that, like a cartoonish view of the grapefruit. And I really do feel like I've energized myself and now I'm safe. So it might not sound like a big deal to someone listening, but once I found these bags of organic grapefruit, and each bag, those mesh plastic bags that hold, and you can sort of see through them and mm-hmm. pick them up. And there were, I think each bag had 8 or 10 grapefruits in them, and there was an entire garbage full of them. So there might have been 100 grapefruits. Unfortunately, I was not with a tour. I was alone. And it's a painful experience to find so much good food. This is all good. There was nothing really wrong with any of these grapefruits. They were perfect and beautiful.
And organic.
And organic. And I was pained. And this is years ago, but it's memorable to me because it was grapefruits, which I have a special superstition about, and also because of the quantity, and because then I spent probably an hour and a half making it my mission to make sure these grapefruits get taken by passersby.
Mm.
You would think that would be easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy to give away free food, people think.
They're very distrustful because of such strange things that have happened in the past. Rare, but have happened.
Yes. I always feel like they think I'm selling them religion, or I'm trying to get money back. Or
harm them in some way.
I guess,
we have a crazy society. Yep.
I guess so. I guess maybe people, or, if I tell the truth, which I did that night, the store's throwing these out. Right away, that means something. That means, well, there's a reason the store is throwing it out. Mm-hmm. And I had already been doing this for years, and I already have been living very well on very high-quality food that's been thrown out. But I can't express this well enough to someone who hasn't been on a tour with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe that we are in a society that does so much wrong. And I know, I understand that people want to trust that people are doing the right thing. And I wish I could assure people that we're in a good moral society and we are doing the right thing. I wish I could say that.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel, unfortunately, that we are in a society that's based on profit. And if somebody is not going to make money off something anymore, it's very easy to just discard the item, no matter how valuable, no matter how much someone else can use it. It's garbage if somebody's not making money on it.
We are seen as consumers, not citizens.
Yes.
Now, you were telling me earlier, I want to talk a little bit about this, that all of the events that go on and how wasteful they are. So we've heard there are some events that are popping up that call themselves zero waste events. And I'm not quite sure how they accomplish that. But let's talk about the ones that aren't zero waste events, which are most of them that go on, like the New York City Marathon.
Just before we came into this room, you asked me, where did I get these nice sneakers? And
they are nice.
They are very nice, and I was lucky that they fit me perfectly. I got these sneakers because in the first Sunday of November, I go to New York City after the marathon, or while it's winding down and the slower runners. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that, because every person who finishes a marathon is a winner.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mean that in any kind of disparaging way. But I'm there as it's dark, and I'm looking for the explicit purpose of finding what is being discarded. And it's overwhelming. The reason that people don't think so much about this waste is because New York City has an amazing Department of Sanitation. It's extremely efficient and extremely impressive.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most efficient city organizations that I can think of. So they clean it all up. And the next day, like the next day after a ticker tape parade, or the next day after,
or the Times Square ball drop, New Year's Eve, amazing, millions mm-hmm. of people in one tiny spot. And the next day, I mean, you might see little bits of confetti here and there, but for the most part, it's life back to normal. Everything's cleaned up. It is
yes.
amazing. But what is taken away, and where does it go?
Yeah, it's almost like it's a mission to not let us know what's really happening with our own stuff. Our own stuff gets discarded, and it's very convenient that we don't see it anymore. When people throw something away, they don't think any longer, what is away?
Mm-hmm.
Is there an away? We don't toss it to another planet. This is our planet. This is all our home that we're all sharing. So yeah, my sneakers came from the marathon, and I'm guessing that they were worn just on the marathon.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so it had some 23 miles of wear on it.
26.2.
26.2.
I hate to correct you.
But T-shirts and all kinds of sports gear and swag and energy bars, probably water bottles, all kinds
right.
of stuff.
Right. They receive a lot of prizes when they finish the marathon, and they all get a cape. I think they all get one. The cape is a mylar material that reflects, and it's used as an emergency blanket, or it used to be treated as an emergency blanket for campers. And one side is shiny, and the other side is filled with the brand names of the advertisers,
sponsor
the
logos.
Sponsors, right. And it's a prize that I think most runners, if they run more than one marathon, have no use for.
Mm.
And there are piles of these in the trash. And there's just, this is especially offensive given what we know about plastic and the oceans and plastic in the planet in general, that how damaging is plastic? And can't we find something more responsible to do? And when on the one hand, we're talking about let's use paper straws or metal straws or no straws at all, and let's stop using styrofoam. And on one hand, politicians are talking about these problems and people are talking about these problems. And yet, in the bigger picture, we are still inundating ourselves with tons of plastic and bits of wrapping and packaging at a rate that is unprecedented. We're not really solving our problems.
The marathon here in New York City is one day, one event. And yet there are events like this that go on all the time. You've told me about the end of a college semester and what happens.
We Freegans run an event that we call the Dorm Dumpster Dive. And in fact, we do it as a one-day event, but I try to go every day for a week because it's almost jokingly called the Freegan High Holidays. And it's a day, in a way, holiday implies that we're celebrating, but I think it's also the serious days of atonement. It's a very sad time when you think of these young people packing up in a hurry, and I don't want to blame them because it's built into this system, and also it's a habit that this is their world. This is how young people have grown up now, with a lot of disposability and not that much consciousness about what else to do, how to conserve things, and how to not overaccumulate beyond what you can manage. But in any event, the Dorm Dumpster Dive is at we go to the NYU neighborhood in Greenwich Village, and we find a dumpster, or sometimes there are several dumpsters that we go to. And in this case, they are literal dumpsters, and it's a more dirty experience in that sense than a dorm, than a food dive. Because there are also the contents of garbage, of what students have thrown out. But among these things, we can find laptops, cameras, and cell phones, and the accessories that go with these electronics, and the small appliances and middle-size appliances, and clothing, and books, and school supplies, the notebooks, and binders, and folders, and it goes on and on, the blankets, and the towels, and the pillows, and all of these things that I imagine that mom went shopping with this child, this young adult, in August to get them just the right matching towels with the sheets and the beautiful things that they went to one of these high-end or whatever stores to get a beautiful set of bedding and towels. And then less than a year later, there's no nostalgia for a towel. They'll take home other things that they might have bought themselves, but we find hundreds of towels. And I guess the sweaters, that now that it's summer, they don't feel like they need the sweaters anymore. And it's just an overwhelming quantity, and we spend hours, sometimes 7 hours, at one single dumpster, just giving things away, hoping that passersby will take them. And we're trying to encourage people, look, we have hangers. People start ordering. Do you have size 8 pants? Do you have flip-flops? And people are looking for specific things. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping this year to reduce the waste by working with NYU to have a swap in advance of May.
Oh, good.
So we're trying to get things done that reduce the waste, and we're trying to encourage communities to think that way.
Well, I live in Queens, and there's like one day a week when the furniture comes out on the street, especially near the big apartment buildings where people rent. And then when they leave, it's like their whole apartment is out on the street.
Right.
and perfectly good furniture. Some of these things are really stunning. We've brought a few things home. Gary brought a dining room table and four chairs. Can't say that we really needed it, but it really looks nice.
Yes.
And then we have another table and some chairs that didn't go with the table, but I've been spending the last few days painting them all, and they're adorable.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. There are some things that I wouldn't bring in. But there are definitely some things that are perfectly fine and just incredible that they're just going to a landfill.
Yes. And there's a habit that people have of upgrading just because there's an advertisement. Oh, I want that table. Oh, look. And there's things that really force people to think this way, that it's a brainwashing of our people. That how often do we get these flyers in the mail? Every mm-hmm. single week, mm-hmm. sometimes many times a week. And they're from department stores, and they're from furniture stores, and they're from the clothing stores. And these are urging us to flip through the pages, and the big font that gives you the amazingly low price at which you can get this new dresser set and this whole five-piece, seven-piece.
I'm thinking about the paper that all of this is on that I don't— It all comes in the mail, and I put it right into the shredder.
Right.
Trees, one after another.
Right.
Energy, resources.
Right.
It's heartbreaking.
And the millions of dollars that go into mm-hmm. trying to get us to buy more stuff.
I wanted to talk about one more thing. We have, I don't know, about 10 minutes or so. I posted on Facebook just the other day an article, and it was actually from last year, or 2017 even, and it was about cruise ships and how polluting they are. And what surprised me is I don't think I've ever gotten so many shares on an article, but people, it really hit a nerve. And I've personally never been interested in going on a cruise ship. It's something that never appealed to me. And this article kind of helped me feel better about my choice.
Mm.
Now, I have to say that I do fly in an airplane, and an airplane is also very polluting.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something different about a cruise ship. And there's a lot of waste. Tremendous amount of waste. There's food waste, energy waste. There's a lot of waste involved.
Yeah, it's something to do with, I guess, our luxurious society, that we have to find ways to entertain ourselves and give an artificial sense of extra luxury. And it's not good enough to just enjoy a beautiful day with a beautiful tree or beach or walk or hike. Or there are a lot of ways that we can love our planet and treat it with respect and enjoy it. And then to put ourselves on these ships where the energy of running the ship and the all the economy that goes with that, because there's hundreds of people who are just working to run the ship and to feed the people and to cook. And then people might argue with you about, if you stop cruises, you're hurting the economy, which is my problem with talking about the economy and growth.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the nature of where we've come in our society, that we're looking for luxuries that treat us all like we're special, that we're entitled, that we deserve it. These are the words that they use to encourage you to go on a cruise, to get any kind of special piece of furniture or special treatment, that we all deserve it. And if we think differently, why do I deserve it? Why do I deserve, when there are people who are starving, when there are people who don't even have clean water to drink, when there are people who are being murdered within their own government, why do I deserve to go and be served with all-I-can-eat buffets where I can fill my plate and throw it away and spew toxins into the ocean? Why do I deserve that? I think the brainwashing of telling people how much they deserve everything, that we're so entitled, is so dangerous, and that it's not really ultimately satisfying. I don't know how much happiness there is in a deeper sense of the word happiness.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good to feel pleasure. But there are ways to feel a greater joy in actually helping and doing something that feels responsible, that feels something you can be proud of, to do something that helps others, that helps planet, that helps animals, that does something that puts the world in a better place, in a positive direction. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't enjoy themselves. I do think that we can enjoy ourselves and do things that are responsible, which is why I so love the name of your website.
Thank you. And my the nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living. Real.
it's more than just eating.
Yeah.
It's really,
I like to say it's all about food on this program, but my nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, says it all, because it's not just eating, but it's living and lifestyle. And,
right.
And it all, we need to be responsible about all of it.
Right.
I think about when I talk about eating organic, and I know that there's a lot of issues around eating organic. A lot of people say it's cost prohibitive. They don't have access to it. There's a lot of issues. But I say over and over that I prioritize in my life. I don't make a lot of money. I work hard, but I'm not someone that's going after big money. And I prioritized what my budget can allow. And number one on there is the healthiest food I can find, organic, vegan, plant food. Vegan, plant food, that's kind of redundant, but you know what I mean. And I it's like you're saying, there are just things that I don't need. I don't need all this stuff. And now I'm struggling because I'm trying to tidy up my apartment. I've been on this mission for 2 years now, and there's still plenty of stuff. And the question is what to do with it. And some of it's going to a landfill, unfortunately, because it's really not usable. But it's difficult, all this stuff that we accumulate.
Right. It is. It is. And I feel like we do have access to certain ways to be responsible even then, that if we're careful when we're discarding, there's a lot of paper matter. And instead of a landfill, at least it could be recycled. And the plastic we can get recycled. And then the furniture, there's certain share groups on the internet where you can post on Freecycle and Craigslist and others that will allow you to possibly have a chance to give away some things that somebody out there might want, especially if it's posted as free instead of at a low price. And I think that's a great service, although the internet also has some sinister aspects to it. I think there's some positive things, and that's a service that otherwise how would people even know about ways to share with each other? So I dedicate myself a lot of time to taking things from some people and passing them on to other people. And I, as soon as I hear that you have things that might go to a landfill, I'm jumping with the thought of, well, maybe I know someone, maybe I can find someone. And it's in some ways overwhelming to think of the burden.
You can't save everything.
Well, mostly I think it's more important to think about reusing and reducing than recycling. And so that little by little, there are certain trends in minimalism and simple living. And sometimes those are sort of a mockery of what they say they are, because they seem to be selling products. But in other cases, yes, it's a great way to rethink, to downsize, to minimalize, to live simply, to buy less, to use less, to repurpose, to try to take what you're wearing and turn it into something else, to take a shirt and make it into a tote bag, to take my latest hobby is to take broken umbrellas and to turn the cloth from the umbrella into a tote bag. So now we're using reusable bags, and it's personal. It's mine. It's not just something that I had to go out and get from somewhere else.
Very good. I was just thinking, I have an umbrella at home that I need to repair. I'm not making tote bags out of them, but I sew them back so that they connect with the metal part that separate from. It's easy.
Yes, it is.
It's very easy. Well, we have just like a minute and a half left, Janet, so we did it.
We did it.
You are here. You came on the show. I'm so glad, and I've learned a lot. Thank you for telling us about your life, your philosophy, and freeganism. And maybe some of you, I'm not saying that you have to go out and pull things out of the garbage, but I hope that you'll think about everything, especially as you may want to let it go, what it is and where it's going and how you can reduce your own footprint.
Thank you so much for having me, Karen. And if people are more curious to find out more, I encourage them to check out freegan.info on the internet.
Okay, on the World Wide Web. freegan.info. Hey, everybody, thank you for joining me today. I am Karen Hartglass. You have been listening to It's All About Food. You can send me comments and questions to info@realmeals.org. And you can listen to this program and 10 years worth of programs at responsibilityandliving.com, where I archive and transcribe all of them. Have a delicious week.